Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor that you have joined. This podcast is a celebration of you. This is where industry professionals come and talk. That's what this is about. And we feature the women and men of industry and the women of men of manufacturing, the women and men of technology and everything in between. Because you're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, you innovate. Boy, do you innovate. You're not just changing the world, you're changing the lives of individuals in the world. You're saying to yourself, Scott, hey, who's on the hot seat? Marty Osborne. That's right. He's the president of Edvoco, and they're an Infor EAM partner, and they excel at implementations, and he's going to start sharing his secrets because we're going to be talking about the five enemies of success. Let's get it cracking. You know what Edvoco means? I didn't know it. I asked him. It means trusted advisor. I think that's pretty cool. And they are, man. They know exactly what they're doing when it comes to EAM implementations. They know when maintenance matters in an organization. You just can't wing these things, man. You've got to have an organization that is committed to maintenance and doing it right and leveraging technology to create a business of resiliency. So I had this epiphany, and I don't even know how to spell epiphany, but I know that it's a word, and it's like a light bulb. Going off in your head, and it revolves around the Infor EAM platform, and I've had hours and hours and hours of conversation about Industry 4.0 and everything that it goes into that, and now we're talking about Industry 5.0, but I have all of that information in my head. There has to be an enterprise system to truly facilitate a successful Industry 4.0 initiative. And that's what Infor EAM brings to the table. And that's what companies like Edvoco, they develop and deploy, because the reality, we always talk about collaborating. We always talk about innovation. We always talk about education. And you know, you can do that right now. In fact, do it. But the reality for a business who truly is resilient going forward is that you're leveraging technology. You have a culture that is committed to really sound principles such as maintenance and the principles around it, so that God forbid, we have another two-fingered COVID punch in the head. You're ready because you've got the technology, you've got the culture, you've got the people in place that knows how to really, truly keep that business rolling and be able to be nimble when things like that take place. That's the reality of it, and that's what we're talking about, because I'm all about, IoT devices. Absolutely. I'm all about edge. I'm all about, cloud. I'm all about all of this stuff, this AI, ML, all of these things that 5G, boom, right around the corner, right there, right now, things are happening. So there's a lot of technology, a lot of innovation going on out there, and you need a system. You need an enterprise system to be able to handle all of that in a way that makes sense. Not something clunky, not something difficult to manage, but something that's nimble. Infor EAM is that particular product, and partners like Edvoco and Team Edvoco and Marty Osborne, they'll make you a success. And I'll have all the contact information for Marty, because you're going to be dazzled by him. All right, let's get on with the interview. Marty Osborne, president of Edvoco and Team Edvoco, and we're talking about the five enemies of success. Now, I've got them right here. So you're going to have to, grab a piece of paper and pencil and write it down, or push pause, and you got to get this stuff down, because he is dropping some wisdom. He's got some sage happening here with all of these points. So enjoy the conversation with Marty Osborne. Marty Osborne, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute. I mean, I'm telling you, listeners out there, you're in for a treat, a very good surprise here. He's one of my favorites. How about that for an intro, Marty?
Wow. That's You're going to set the bar a little too high, man.
Well, it's not very high when it comes to me, my friend. Absolutely. And I really appreciate it. I really appreciate finding time in your busy schedule, because it is a busy time for you and your company and team at Voco. Now, before we get into the interview and get into the meat of the conversation, give us a little 411 on who Marty is and why you're such an incredible professional, and do not mention Clemson.
Oh, I mentioned Clemson.
I just did.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess, Scott, we go back and forth because we're both Tigers. You just happen to be the wrong Tiger.
Yeah, it's been a rough year for the old LSU fan.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's been. But hey, thanks for having me. You know, I always enjoy our conversations because they're pretty lively. As you said, we like to riff off each other. But, yeah, again, Marty Osborne, and I'm the president and one of the partners at Voco. And again, Voco in Latin means to call in a trusted advisor. And so that's always been our mantra with our clients, our teams, is how do we become their trusted advisor when we're implementing Infor EAM. And it's kind of a unique business because that's all we do. So we don't do Maximo, we don't do Oracle, we don't do SAP. We are Infor EAM. And you know, I think the reason we do it is, I like to say, we know how the movie ends. And that's kind of our mantra, and how do we help our clients get the most out of their software and hopefully reach their true potential.
Yeah, and the Infor EAM product is very, and for listeners out there, EAM stands for Enterprise Asset Management. It is an enterprise solution that allows you to truly get visibility into your asset base. If you're a manufacturer, if you're whatever industry, boom, this is an enterprise system that is both flexible, powerful, and constantly improves. Mm. It's amazing. And then you get people like Voco, companies like Voco, people like Marty, who just, man, excel at that capabilities. Now, we're going to have to touch upon a subject matter that is really important to me. And I know that we've had this conversation offline, and listeners out there, take a paper to pencil or whatever, computer and keyboard, I don't care, take notes on this particular conversation, because we know as well as I do, there's certain times when maintenance succeeds and maintenance doesn't succeed. And I'm interested in, is like, when does like maintenance matter? Like me as a company, when do I embrace maintenance? And I think it's a great thing. When does maintenance matter?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny, is we've spent a lot of time. I mean, Voco has been 13 years. We've probably, believe it or not, have done almost 500 implementations. And so
of EAM?
EAM. Quite a few over the past, 13 years. We went back and started counting. And, you know, you start to look at, you know, the challenge kind of in front of us is, how do we help our clients, right, live up to that true potential? And, you know, to deliver that results. And so as we started kind of digging into this, we just really kind of came up with that theme, is when maintenance matters. That seemed to be the differentiator. And Scott, you know, I mean, we get in the purchasing world, right? There's requirements gathering, there's RFPs, and there's demos, and there's all these things that try to help you build success, yet no matter how much time they spend on it, I mean, there's statistics out there that over 50% of EAM projects either fail or fail to hit the mark. And so it kind of drives at us and saying, how can we, again, be better than that?
Yeah, and you know, as well as I do, I've been at a number of facilities and a number of places and around the world and all that good stuff. And if I ever have a conversation with the maintenance team, they'll say maintenance matters, but they still have issues with maintenance.
Yeah.
And that to me is an interesting, what looks like for me in the world of business, in the world of maintenance, that I demonstrate what matters. It matters to me. How do I demonstrate that?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. And you know, it's funny, is one of the things we always say is companies can't meet their goals, right, or their objectives if they don't have safe, reliable equipment, right? If that truck doesn't deliver the chips or deliver the Pepsis, or that machine doesn't cut the beef or whatever it's trying to do, we can never meet our goals. And so what we find is from a maintenance side is how does that make it matter? And so I think you start to dig in, and what we looked at is, you know, in the organization, getting people involved. And so we actually came up with something we call the five enemies of success, right? So, you know, maintenance matters when you go through these five enemies or these sort of five checklists. And I think they kind of help you distinguish what you need to do to be successful.
So this is interesting because you'll have this conversation with, when you sit down with a client, right? They're sort of saying the right terms, but you still have to determine, you and your organization have to determine if maintenance truly matter, because it hinges upon your success, the success of the implementation, and as well as your client success, which is the ultimate goal, is to help them succeed in whatever they're trying to accomplish. So these are the questions you would ask them?
Yeah, so these are things I think kind of boil down that we see kept companies from reading, you know, meeting that overall objective. And, you know, it's going to be silly, but number one is very simple, but does your product have a name or an identity?
I don't understand that. You would think that is the case. Come on.
Believe it or not, I mean, we name our dogs, our cars, our boats, our you know, everything around us, but we don't really name our projects, right? And so what you kind of need is that rallying cry. So if maintenance matters, and it's funny, Scott, you'll crack up, but if you walk around a plant or an operation, you'll see a quality banner. You'll see a safety banner. You'll see a mission statement. When have you ever seen a maintenance banner?
You don't. The banner I always saw was that one that had that cheesy mirror. Safety depends on you.
Yeah. Oh. And so what we started to do is we looked at with the clients is how do we name that project? Give it an acronym that gives maintenance a purpose, something that they can rally around. And so as an example, and I'm wearing my shirt right now, but it's pride, right? We love pride and maintenance, and pride stands for people really interested in delivering excellence. And so as we start this project and you go to do your EAM project, it just can't be, well, we put a piece of software in, you know?
It does fall flat when you put it that way. It's like, yeah, we did an enterprise. So what is that? Nah, never mind. I got to go eat a sandwich.
Yeah, well, we have a kickoff meeting and there's no rallying cry. There's nothing there. And so right at the beginning of every project is we like to name it. And so Pride and Maintenance is a name we use quite often. And we actually will create a banner. And when we go live, everybody signs it and says, we're committed to this. Not only the VP of manufacturing, the CFO, we've had presidents all the way down, which tells them, maintenance matters, that this is important in the process. So to us, just simply step number one is name your project. And the best graphic I ever saw was a banner they put over the maintenance store and said, pride starts here, right?
It's interesting. And what I sense, because many of these challenges always occur, you've got to get that executive to buy in, that executive to say, yeah, I want to sponsor, support, do everything I can and be at the forefront of my thinking. And given the fact that you're naming the project, you're creating a buzz around it. It's like internal marketing. You're creating a buzz around that project and getting that president, getting that VP, getting that executive to sign off. That sort of in essence says you're part of this, so don't let us down.
Yep. Yeah, like I said, we kind of poke you. Does maintenance matter? Does it really matter? We'll poke you, but we'll look around. Where is that banner? Because again, maintenance, you know, they've always kind of feel like, are they invited to the table? That kind of stuff. So to me, just number one is, do your projects have names? Do your maintenance team have an identity? And when they do, right, that pride exudes in everything that they do, and that's what we want.
I like it. Number one, name that project. Yeah. Name your projects. Sounds like a game show.
Name it. So this one, again, and these are all kind of basic stuff, but number two is, are the right people involved? You know, right from the get-go, who's on your team, right? Who is involved in the project? You know, do we have representation from the asset management group, from the MRO group, from the purchasing group, you know, from the IT group? Like, we believe that there's five kind of key stakeholders, from asset management to the work order groups to MRO, purchasing, and IT. And when all five are represented and they're on that team and they're part of this, then that's when the magic happens. And again, we always see that battle. We either see a maintenance team or we'll see an IT team, but do they really, are they coordinated?
Yeah, and you're right about that. And I've seen it all too many times where it's then all of a sudden it just sort of evolves into an IT project, and then it's shoved down the throat of the people in the field, and then nobody likes it, and everybody, and then all of a sudden it just sort of implodes because we weren't a part of the process. But that's right. That starts with your number one. If I give it a name, if I get real executives leadership, then I'm going to, me, executive person, will then make sure that I have the right team in place representing the organizations that have a vested interest in the success of this implementation.
Yeah. I always chuckle because we always talk about change management, getting like the users to change. And it's not the users. It's usually the leadership team that needs the change, that they got to believe that this is important and that this is mission critical, and that they can't reach any of those company goals, stock price, anything else without it. And so, getting everybody involved, and it's not just this maintenance project. Like, let's tuck it away.
Let me sort of point this out. So you're going down this road, you're sitting around, you got a bunch of people in a conference room or whatever, you're chowing on some sandwiches, whatever it might be. And, when does your little red flag go up and you're saying, hey guys, hey, I'm just telling you right now, I think we have a gap here on the team. We don't have the right people. We're missing X. And make sure that at that moment, you're making sure that everybody's buying in, but you got to get that team. If you don't have the right team, you're going to fall apart. Do you ever just step in and say, guys, this ain't going to work?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's right from the get-go, we'll start to even look at who is represented, who's not, because we also know if the CFO or the VP of ops, somebody asked me, and this is kind of funny, but how do you guarantee your project? I said, I can guarantee ROI in every project, and it's easy, right? I just take it out of your budget, right? You just take the money out of the budget. But what that does is everybody wants a project, and the minute I say we're going to take the money out of your budget, then we're like, whoa, wait a minute, right?
Right.
Now we get to the crux, right?
Right?
Now the VP is really saying, or the maintenance team is, does this matter? If you're saying I'm going to have a return on investment of X, are you willing to give it back? Because savings only occurs if I don't spend it, right? What do they say? Right. The easiest way to double your money is take it out, fold it in half, and stick it back in your pocket. And so I think that when maintenance matters, again, we look at the ROI, we look at our budgets, and if whatever our project is, it has to pay for itself. And so with the right people, those become the right conversation.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on that. And I think that just the principles behind it, N4EAM, what you're trying to do, you're trying to create greater insights to keep that asset up and running, producing whatever you're producing, bottom line value, all of that stuff is real important. And being able to strategically pull assets out and do the maintenance on them at the right time, that minimizes the impact to the overall organization. And that those things are just key. And you can't help but have real return on that investment. All right, number three.
I think number three is, it's simple, is that you put the how in front of the why. And you got to think about this is how, right? How are we going to do this? What are the features? What are the requirements? How? When in actuality, does everybody in the organization know the why? Why are we doing this? Right?
Hold on. You're saying put the how in front of the why, or do it?
Put the why in front,
put the why in front of the how.
Yeah.
You're killing me there. I just audited the hell out of you, right? Just then and there, I'm going, what the? That makes no sense.
I guess it's you put the how in front of the why. That's when you fail, but the why needs to come there. But it's just again, it's, we get so caught up in the how, right? In the details. Yeah. And that's maybe the engineer in us.
Yeah.
It's maybe the technical side, but it's back to even number one is when we name a project, it's tied to the why. It becomes that rallying cry. And we understand is, are we trying to drive greater, you know, output? Are we trying to create greater efficiencies? Are we trying to, you know, reduce the cost or visibility? And, you know, it's a lot of times it's amazing. Again, we go through these RFP processes and they're just how, and never, why are you doing this?
Why?
Like, why?
Yeah. And it's interesting because you're spot on. There are many, all of the conversations, it's not that it's, you better understand the why you're deploying a system like this. Then you could say, yeah, we're all bought in on the why, because the why does, you know, that's, yeah, thumbs up on the why. Yeah. Then you could go and venture into, well, we got the why, let's figure out the how. And I think that that's, you're right. I mean, I've been on so many projects. How do you do that? How do you do it? I want to know why.
Yeah. How do you create a work order? How do you do this? How do you do that?
That's right.
Are you, what are you really trying? Are you trying to build a more reliable operation, right? Are you trying to streamline the way we pass things, you know, around? Are we trying to get better planning, better scheduling, better, you know, again, we're in a very interesting time when equipment and technology, right? Equipment is getting so automated, you know, getting so technical. And again, is it tied to, well, how do we fix this stuff? Where do we find manuals? Where do we get this detail? So yeah, I think it's really.
Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, if the system is configured, if the system is configured to your why, right, and you're trying to be more efficient at the ability to be able to gain insight, collect information, and you know, the old way, hopefully the old way is that you're wasting a lot of time trying to find those documents, wasting a lot of time doing what you need to, or you think you need to do, when a system can make you more efficient. I mean, it's imperative that you have to understand that why.
Yeah.
So and far, you're just talking people and culture right now, just FYI. Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking, right?
It's like, that's it. I mean, you can wrap it up.
But for some reason we get into software and we follow this manual that just goes back to, 250 requirements, and half the time we'll look at a requirement and say, why is this important? Right? I don't know. We just, you know.
And have that conversation. Why is this? And people are going, well, it was, it's, and they just stutter and stammer through the whole thing. And it's like, yeah, you don't need it.
Right. And again, it's just back to that rallying cry. When people know the why, right, the maintenance team becomes more engaged, right? Yeah. They become more a part of the organization and it really ties things together. And so, yeah, we love that conversation. And so that's number three. Number four, again, in this one, we see it. And again, it's tied back to, I think these all are intertwined, is there's just a lack of buy-in, right? And and it's weird, but I always use the example, and you'll laugh, is we started rolling out like mobile. And the technician goes, oh, this is too hard. And the people are like, the leadership's like, we can't do it. The mechanic says it's going to take too long. And I use the example of the ATM machine. If I ask the bank president what he thinks of an ATM machine, what's he going to say?
It's a great thing.
It adds to productivity. It allows
us. I use it because I don't want to talk to anybody. And it's a fantastic thing for me.
Yeah, it's great. But you look at a bank president, bank manager, why do they like that technology, right? It lets them serve their customers quicker. Yeah. It allows them to process things more. If I ask a customer like yourself and you think about it, what do you think of ATM, right? I have access to my money. I don't have to talk to anybody. I can deposit checks midnight or 6 a.m. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But if I ask the bank teller, what do they think of ATMs? What are they going to say?
Well, they don't like it because it's their job, I guess.
Right? So their bias comes in. And at first they're like, oh, it's going to take my job. So, oh, it's too complicated. It's, you know, customers are going to have problems and all this stuff. And the irony is there are more bank tellers today than there were 10 years ago, even with ATMs.
Really?
But what happens
serving
is
me.
Well, you see more and more smaller banks out there, but what does a teller become? They become more customer service, right?
Yeah, that's
they become true. More deal with the problems. And I think when we get into the technicians by providing them the tools, it's not taking their job. It's just making them more customer service to the assets and that kind of stuff. And so I think, you know, when we talk about buy-in, I think we can talk about it from the organization and that they have to understand. And Seth Godin has a great line, says in search of familiarity.
Yeah.
We go to work to be familiar. We drive the same way. We go to the same office. When I go to church, I sit in the same pew on the same side, right? It's, you know, it's in search of familiarity. And so when we go to roll technology out, people will use code words like, well, this is not user friendly. This is going to take too long. You know, when reality, what they're just saying is, I don't understand. I feel kind of dumb. You just need to teach me. And so that whole buy-in needs to understand that there's going to be challenges. People are involved in that. When we're sold on the why, we're sold on the tool, then it's going to be great. But so many projects fail because they'll pull the plug or, yeah, you don't have to do that. Or, you know, it's not important we close our work orders out. Or, you know, it's not odd that I got 1,000 work orders in backlog.
But see, here's the deal. If I'm following your process, if I'm following the enemies of success, and I name my project, right? And I get people to sign the banner, and there's a lot of fanfare, that internal marketing. And if I have some sort of, I've got the right people, right? That conversation's happening. I shouldn't have a problem with lack of buy-in, right? Mm-hmm. That should not even be a part because I've done my part. I understand my why. I've got the right people involved, and I've named my project.
Yeah, and it's funny because we've actually got to the point where we were struggling on the implementation, and the senior leadership was struggling, and we reminded them of the banner. Right? How do you get the number 4? You remember number 1. And it's amazing. Once people signed and early on, we got that initial signature, then there should be the buy-in. But again, every day, right, there's just forces that are always against us. There's people that are going to challenge, and we just have to keep remembering that. And it's interesting. When you go to a meeting and everybody nods their head and doesn't say a word, we'll actually walk away and say that was the worst meeting we ever had. Because we have a saying, you've got to weigh in to buy in. So if you don't don't challenge, if you, you know, think about anything that you really care about, you always weigh in. Right, wrong, or indifferent, you might say, hey, this is too many steps, or we have a 4-step approval process. We're never going to do that, right?
Right.
That tells me you're bought in just by the fact that you brought that up. And now we can deal with it. But if you just sit in a meeting and like, right, the worst scenario is you walk away, this will never work, but you don't speak up, then typically
That's really interesting because I feel the same way, but I've never used it in such a way that says weigh-in is buy-in because if I'm not getting people peppering me with questions, like, hey, what about this? What about that? I know that I'm not doing my job. I'm not creating interest. I don't know what I'm just not doing it. And it always bothered me. It's like, really? You guys don't have anything to say.
They all just smiled and nodded their head, right?
They love me.
Like, I think this is the greatest since, you know, greatest thing since Grimm, yeah, we say in the South. And
that's a pearl of wit. That's sage advice right there. The listeners out there, nobody weighing in, nobody's buying in, baby. They're going back to their cubicle business as usual. Number 5.
Number 5, and this is the one I think brings it home, but this one's the hardest one is you have to have a culture, you know, or if you have a culture of distrust, then that becomes an enemy, right? If teams are fighting each other, if teams don't believe that people in the same room have their own best interest, then it will fall down. And trust is one of the hardest things in the world, right? Trust is, and I say it's not a bank account. Like you can't build it. And, you know, it's simple golden rule, right? Treat others you want to be treated. But I watch organizations and they just, go at each other, right? They attack each other. And, you know, we have to, that operations has to have a trusting relationship with the maintenance team that's going to get it done, that will do it properly. Yeah. And quite frankly, maintenance teams, and it's why we love the word pride, is maintenance teams will talk about, well, nobody, you know, trusts us. They don't, you know, they give us the equipment, it's broke. They'll give us all the excuses, but have you earned that trust? Have you done the things that makes production say, yes, I can give it to you. You'll give it back to me in the right, in better order and on time.
You know, it's interesting when you bring up culture, right? I mean, it's just, that is like an iceberg, right? You can see some of the things, but boy, there's a lot of stuff underneath that water, that iceberg. And I find sometimes if you have a culture that doesn't trust, mistrust, doesn't, whatever, everybody's trying to protect their little kingdom. Mm-hmm. Everybody's concerned about, quote, making a mistake. And you almost have to remove some of that, because people are not going to put themselves out there if that culture is one that pounds people over the head for making a mistake. I'm not going to put, you know?
I'm not going there. I'm
keeping my head down low because I don't want that two-finger death punch on my head. And that's sad, because the fear of failure, the fear of making mistakes, the fear of being pointed out, whatever you want to call it, really impedes the opportunity of success. It just does. And I always get down to the point, Marty, is anybody going to die? No, just try it, figure it out, make it safe, of course. But but that you're absolutely right. That culture is gah. And it'll, I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, it sort of swings. It's like, you know, and
there's a pyramid that's explained. There's a book called The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni, and it's probably one of the best things around trust, is that at the bottom, when you start with trust, the next layer is, how do you handle conflicts, right? And it kind of goes back to weighing in to buy-in, right? Yeah. A lot of people won't weigh in because they're afraid, right, of repercussions under the trust side. And so healthy organizations always trump the smart organizations, right? You can have a bunch of smart people, but if they don't have trust and they can't deal with conflict, right? They can't say, hey, yeah, I screwed up, or yeah, that was a mistake, or can we do it? When you have that conflict, and if you can have open dialogue, open conflict, then you can start to get to commitments, right? And the next, once you get commitments, that then goes to accountability, which goes to results. But trust always is at that conflict level. And if you think about it with your best friend, and I think somebody said, you know, they're a true friend when they still like you and they know who you are, right?
Thank God. Or you could just be me and I have just friends that are virtual, and then I shut them down and then I go to the ATM because I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah. So trust is, and it's a two-way street.
It's huge.
And so I think, and that's why it's number five, and it's kind of the last one that is the hardest.
It is.
The enemy is, if there's a culture of mistrust, if there's a culture, and I hate to say, of abuse and verbal abuse, you know, then people are just going to shut down, and, you know, they're going to use words, it's not my job, or they'll use words that, oh, this is too many steps, or this, they'll give you code words that doesn't actually say, I don't want to do this because nobody's going to look at it, or, you know, nobody will matter, or you want to put a maintenance system in and you never give me the equipment. So if you're never going to shut it down, and then it breaks down and you yell at the maintenance team, well, does maintenance really matter? Or is it just...
And it happens all the time. I guarantee you that finger's pointing. Like, why did that pump break? Well, it's a maintenance problem, right? And it's like, it happens all the time. These are huge. I mean, as you start to dig into deep, okay, listeners, right again. These are five enemies of success. Did you know, people don't name a project. They just don't name it. There's no real personal element to it. Do you have the right people in place? A lot of people don't. They just sort of run these projects. They just get people who have spare time, and that ain't going to work, right? It's just not going to work. Do you understand the why first as opposed to the how first. So don't put the how first, do the why first. And then lack of buy-in, which just blows me away. After you go through 1 through 3, I can't believe you have lack of buy-in, but we are human beings and we have different cultures. And then the last one, of course, culture of mistrust. That'll just keep on, man, you'll stub your toe on that one all the time too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think when we bring it all together, you know, we always said there's nothing worse than fear and uncertainty, right? And as people get into these EAM projects, you know, they have all these things. And so what we do and what we try to do with our customers, as I mentioned earlier, by being in for EAM only is we know, I would like to say, we know how the movie's going to end. Like, we know the code, we know the words. And when we do that, it helps us understand where we are, and hopefully we can take you through that process. And again, sometimes people are looking for, well, do you have planners? Do you have schedulers? Do you have this? Do you have a clean storm? I mean, they're all important things, but without these five, the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. Just and I'll just sort of throw this out there, is 500 plus implementations. You got some street cred out there when it comes to implementing these bad boys. That's pretty serious stuff, man, because you've seen it all. I guarantee you, you've seen it all, and then some.
Well, every day you get amazed. And look, even now with COVID, right? You know, you know, there's a thing we always say, right? The rent is due every day. So things always are changing and, you know, how we evolve. But even in today's world with Zoom, with the tools, you can still follow these things. And in some cases, like, we have a rule, we always have our cameras on at Voco, always, because it's the respect that I think we need. And when we get into these projects, there is a level of intimacy that in some cases you can get in Zoom that you can't get, right?
Yeah, but if I'm looking at you, yes, you're looking at me, I'm looking at you, and you can't, hey, don't look away. I could see that, but it's the ones that are silent off in the back that you can't see.
Yeah.
That to me, I can see you now, and I can sit there and chirp at you, and you better be right in my face, man. Are you active out there on LinkedIn?
I am. So, yep, Marty Osborne, and, you know, again, I publish a weekly blog called Marty's Minute on leadership, and, you know, these are just 1 minute stories about things I've read, things I've seen, heard that I can share with you. So www.martysminute.com. And it's my favorite thing to publish each and every week. And by the way, I'll share with you one story. And I wrote something and I heard this through somebody that said, if you weren't afraid, what would you do? Right. It's kind of a great question.
That's pretty
cool. Right. It's a question. And it talked about a guy who came home. He was struggling, got laid off from his job, despondent. And somebody looked at him and said, if you weren't afraid, what would you do? And he said, I'd go back and get my degree, went back, got a 2-year IT degree, and then had the career, you know, and how great it was. But I was doing an interview with Tammy Riley, who's the reliability EAM at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Super person, and I asked her that.
She's landed on aircraft carriers.
Yes. I mean, holy crap. You know, her mom asked her when she was 18 and said, Tammy, if you weren't afraid, what would you do? I mean, what a great thing for your mom to ask you that question. And she said, I want to land planes on aircraft carriers. Like, okay. And guess what? That's what she did. And so, yeah, I think it just kind of ties all this stuff back together as teams, as people. You know, ask yourself, if you're not afraid, what would you do?
I'm writing that down because I like that. And it does. It makes you sort of go, you perk up. You're like, yeah, that's an interesting question. I might have to think through it.
Yep.
I don't even know what. I would probably do podcasts if I wasn't afraid.
No.
Podcasts. All right, reach out to Marty.
I'm not
Marty,
sure
thank
there's
you
anything
very much,
that scares
man.
You.
You're awesome. Again, awesome stuff. Okay, everything. Listeners out there, you know you're not going to go away because I'm going to wrap it up on the other side. We're going to have that link to Marty's Minutes, absolutely, because you must connect there. Marty, you were absolutely wonderful. Advoca is a great company. And that, I didn't know it meant trusted advisor.
Yeah, to call in a trusted advisor. And that's you know, our goal is each and every day is how do we earn that title? And to me, the greatest compliment we can get is somebody says that we were their trusted advisor. And that's what we strive for.
It'd be tough working for Ed Voco. You know why? Because you never let up. Like I couldn't even relax. Here comes Marty, man. I better look like I'm busy. Look at me.
All right, guys.
Thank you, listeners. Hang tight. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. Two words. Marty Osborne. Put that down on your book right now, and reach out to him. So you go out to a stack card on LinkedIn. Boom. Marty Osborne. There might be a few more Marty Osbornes out there. Put a little comma at Voco, A-D-V-O-C-O, and you'll find him. And boy, you'll talk about a wealth of knowledge. Holy shnikey. He's amazing. So I'm going to have all that contact information out on industrialtalk.com. Of course. I have to. And definitely, remember, 5 points, those five enemies of success. Don't do it. Anyway, as always, let's be bold. Let's be brave. Let's dare greatly. Let's be committed to changing the world. That's what we're all about. And then that second little effort, find people who are bold, brave, and dare greatly. You will not be disappointed. And you guys are just going hand in hand, going forward, changing the world. That's what we're all about here on the Industrial Talk Podcast, because it is a celebration of you. Take care. We're going to have another great conversation right around the corner. So be safe. We'll talk later.